Good morning. It is time to get up with Double Trouble in the Bubble. Are we on the verge of a stunning collapse? What would it mean if that duo loses in round one? We'll start there. Then, upon further review, one NFL coach didn't mean what he said or say what he meant. We'll explain the inexplicable in just a few minutes. And then, our rating of the NFL's top 100 players. Wait until you see what we put Dak. Does he really belong that high? We'll answer all those and other questions as we get up with you, starting right now on a Tuesday from Bristol, Connecticut. I'm Mike Greenberg. Thanks for getting up with us on ESPN. Jam-packed we are. Tons of football to get to as the season kicks off next Thursday. But we start with the game of the night. And as I said, double trouble in the bubble. Chris Paul and the Thunder facing elimination against James Harden and the Rockets. And I'm going to pick it up in a close game. Fourth quarter, Rockets up a deuce. Harden in the corner. Stepping back. Rockets up five. Harden would score 32. But then CP3 would take over the game, putting the three in CP3. Thunder within three. Next possession. Paul closely guarded by Robert Covington. But he'll step it back, and he'll let Covington know all about it. 28 points, 7 assists, 7 boards, no turnovers for Chris Paul. Under 15 to go, tied at 100. Paul draws the foul. Chance to give his team the lead. He would make the first. Here comes the second. 13 seconds left. OKC by 2. Will Houston call timeout? No, they won't. Will Houston find Harden? No, they won't. Will Westbrook throw it away? Yes, he will. Russell Westbrook, one of 7 turnovers on the night. Covington not looking. Thunder win, forcing a game 7. What a performance from CP3.
As far as our team, this is who we are. You know what I mean? We built for stuff like this. A lot of guys on our team been, you know, pushed out, traded or whatnot, but we just stick together and we keep fighting.
We're going to respond. We'll clean up some things. And like I said, we can't play much worse, so we'll play better.
All right, so here's the deal. Chris Paul was the entire show. In the fourth quarter, he outscored Harden and Westbrook by himself. He did it by going 3 for 3 from deep and, again, 0 turnovers, while the Rockets' dynamic duo could make only 3 shots total in the final quarter and turned it over 3 times, including the critical one at the very end. And here's Timmy Legler, who joins us early here this morning. So as I sit back and I look at this, I feel like we spent the entire season before we got to the pandemic, sort of cut everything off, talking about small ball, talking about the combination of Westbrook and Harden and all the rest of that. If they go out in round one, it feels like that could be all over. So what legs is at stake for the Rockets in game 7?
Well, I don't think there's any question that there's going to be a coaching change. As far as splitting up Russell Westbrook and James Harden, it's easier said than done when you look at what Russell Westbrook makes. So I actually don't think it's as much the small ball to blame if they lose this series as it is their best players have to play better when it matters the most. And when you look at Oklahoma City, Chris Paul controlled that game, and he got them the shots that they needed to get in the moment. When you look at the Houston Rockets and the way they managed those late-game possessions, obviously the turnover, the big one late by Russell Westbrook, but the bigger question is, why do you have that situation coming out of a timeout where James Harden isn't handling the basketball coming up the floor? And you end up with Russell Westbrook. He's in a hurry. He doesn't make a great read. I don't know that you want to trust him in that situation regardless. And he kicks it out to a Robert Covington who's 30 feet from the basket. That's what they came up with in that timeout prior to those free throws by Chris Paul. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Russell Westbrook ends up with the ball more than Harden late in the game. And he's a guy that's out of rhythm that he missed all this time, was struggling in that game. So for me, it's more about getting the shots you need to out of your star players late in the game. Oklahoma City did it. The Houston Rockets did not. And now the question is, do you trust James Harden in a game 7 to get them through this moment?
At the end of the day, Houston traded Chris Paul to OKC in the Westbrook deal. It would be remarkable if it's the Thunder that wind up knocking them out in 7. Meanwhile, that was the game of the night. Let me get to the performance of the night. And that one clearly belonged to Jimmy Butler. Game 1 against top seed Milwaukee in round 2, and Butler was the entire show, knocking down the 3 in the third quarter. Heat now down a deuce, and it's Butler again. Chris Middleton playing the defense, sort of. Where's the D? Butler unapproached. Tie game, next Heat possession, down by 3. It's Butler again. The dive plus the foul. He would score 12 straight points in the third. Heat by 6 going to the fourth. Fourth quarter, 9 minutes and change to go. Bucks down a deuce. Giannis working hard inside. Gets it to go, but hold on. They called him for a walk, a travel on the Greek Freak. Later in the fourth, 5 minutes and change. Bucks down one. Giannis, oh, that's not close. He was 1 of 4 and 3 turnovers in the fourth quarter. Meanwhile, it would all be all Jimmy Butler. Heat up 3, heat up 6. Jimmy Butler, next possession, could not be stopped. Jimmy Butler would score 40 points on the night. Third player in Heat history with a 40-point playoff performance. LeBron and D-Wade are the others. And so it is Butler and the Heat that take the Game 1 lead.
I mean, say what you will, but I told my teammates I probably wasn't going to pass the ball. I made a couple shots. And they said, you know, that's fine with me.
We've been here before. You know, going down 0-1 from Orlando. We did the same thing last year against Boston. Obviously, this year might be different. We might go down 0-2, but at the end of the day, we got to come out and play game two, man.
So he's right. The Bucks have gone down 1-0 in series quite frequently. But I heard a lot of people in the build-up to this saying that they liked Miami a lot and it was a bad matchup for Milwaukee and that they gave the Heat a really good chance. Through one-game legs, would you assess this, that the Bucks are in some trouble?
There's no question about it. I also was one of those guys that liked the Heat. I picked the Heat to win this series, and primarily because of the way these two teams are going to close games if they're close. And you saw what Jimmy Butler did, and this is what championship teams look like. They have a guy that can go get a shot from anywhere on the floor. And if you look at the way he closed that game, not only did he hit 4 buckets in a row when they needed it, it was 4 different ways. He went left and shot a finesse shot. He shot a pull-up 3. He shot a turnaround jumper in the post, and then he hit a shot going hard right for a pull-up 15-footer on the baseline. So there's no way that you can really, you know, contain him because he's got an answer for whatever the defense calls for. When you contrast that with what the Bucks have to do late in the games, look, it's the same thing that reared its head in an ugly fashion against the Toronto Raptors. As great as Giannis Antetokounmpo is, he is a straight-line dribble guy. And if you take that away from him, he's not going to be very clever with the basketball to escape situations. He is obviously not a guy that you can count on to make mid-range or long-range jump shots over the top of the defense. He struggles with that. He was 4 for 12 from the foul line and missed 2 big ones during that stretch when Jimmy Butler was closing the game. And then Chris Middleton, also a guy that is a good scorer in this league, but he's not someone that could do the kinds of things that Jimmy Butler could do late in the game. So I do think the Milwaukee Bucks are in trouble because I think the Heat are exceptionally well coached. I think these are going to be close games. And in close games, I actually trust not only Jimmy Butler, but Goran Dragic, I trust more as a closer, I think, than the Bucks' best two players. So they are in some trouble here, and the problem is going to be Miami presenting things defensively that I think Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to have a hard time overcoming in the fourth quarter.
That's another one that if that goes that way, there'll be a lot of conversation that comes out of that in the bubble. Timmy Legler, thank you very much. We'll get back to you a little bit later as the NBA playoffs continue. Now to the NFL, where Bears coach Matt Nagy is backtracking and says he intends to reveal his starting quarterback sometime early next week. This after insinuating over the weekend that he would wait until the season opener against Detroit. But he clarified that last night.
What I meant by that, to keep it real simple, was that there was not going to be a quarterback named this week that we're in right now. We're not hiding anything. I think we're going through right now for us this whole process. And we don't even know that yet, to be quite honest. So we're talking through like those situations and what's best and how to go about it. So we're just really honestly not there yet.
Okay, so a little bit confusing. Let's try and make some sense of it. Here's my football crew this morning: Graziano, Greg McElroy, and Jeff Saturday. And Dan, I will start with you. What are you hearing out of Chicago after a little bit of a back and forth with the coach and himself to discuss whether or not he will name a starting quarterback before the opener?
Well, Greeny, the main issue in Chicago is that no one has separated himself from the other guy in the quarterback competition. So obviously a compressed offseason, a shortened training camp in terms of the time they've been able to spend on the field, and not a lot of data from this summer that would help the coaches make an easy decision. So Matt Nagy at this point isn't decided on who he wants to start. And if he is, then, you know, he's not as convinced as he hoped he would be. Trubisky's looked good from my understanding in some ways. Foles in some other ways, maybe a little bit more trustworthy with Foles due to the history that he has and the history that so many members of this coaching staff have with him. But Trubisky offers a little bit more in terms of ceiling. I've been told multiple times Trubisky's had a good camp. This is not the first year I've been told that. So the question you have to face if you're Matt Nagy is, do you buy it this time? Do you trust it this time? Or do you go with the more known quantity?
Well, let's see what Jeff Saturday thinks. What do you buy here? What are you hearing out of there? And what do you think should be going on?
Yeah, Nagy's got to be frustrated. You didn't bring Foles over not to be your starter. So he obviously doesn't like this. And all else being equal, Greeny, Trubisky's got to be your guy. I mean, the truth is, from where you went in the draft, going up to get him with pace, the whole situation, if it's what it is, that's what has to happen on this football team. Here's the biggest issue. If you're a player in the locker room, you already know who the best one is. You just want the coach to go tell the world so nobody has to hide it or slip up in an interview. But the truth is, everybody in that locker room, they understand what's happening on the football field. But all else being equal, you got to go with Trubisky, in my opinion.
Greg, how about you?
Well, I think there's some interesting parallels that we need to acknowledge here. Look, Trubisky's a 26-year-old player, and there's a player that I looked back, and I think he compares somewhat favorably to him, at least in the early part of his career, and that's Alex Smith. Remember Alex Smith in San Francisco? By the way, it took him 6 years to become a productive starter, and the only thing that got him going was the drafting of Colin Kaepernick in 2011. If you look at the numbers, Alex Smith had 51 touchdowns against 53 interceptions. Had under 60% completion rate in his first five seasons as a starter. Remember, he missed 2008 because of an injury. But I think Trubisky could have that type of growth. Maybe bringing in Foles lit a fire under Trubisky that we haven't acknowledged yet, and maybe the best is yet to come. But I think we lose sight of who Trubisky could eventually be because of who was drafted behind him, not all that unlike what happened with Alex Smith, considering the Aaron Rodgers effect that it had and the shadow it cast over his career.
Right, it's a good parallel. I like it. I see the comparison that you're making there. But in this case, they went out and got a guy that, Jeff, you have to believe they went out and got Nick Foles because they believed he would become their starter this season. So if it doesn't go that way, to you, does this feel as though it already hasn't worked out the way the coaching staff wanted it?
Absolutely. Dan made mention of it early. Nagy brings this guy in because this coaching staff has relationships with him. They understand who Foles is. They felt comfortable with him. I guarantee you, they bring him in thinking, hey, this is going to be our guy. Watch when he walks in the room. Watch when he gets on the field. He's going to clearly be the favorite. That has not happened. That means that is a miss from what they expected. Again, Trubisky, if to Greg's point, he's fighting, he's doing those things. Maybe he does have a different trick. But when you talk about what he can do with his feet and what he offers this football team, if it's equal, he's got to be your guy.
All right, we'll wait and see what they wind up doing there. Again, now he says, the coach says, he will announce the starting quarterback before the game against the Lions, so perhaps as soon as next Monday. We'll find out. We're just getting started here as we get up with you this morning. Still to come, the Jaguars did not want Leonard Fournette anymore. Did they do him a huge favor letting him go yesterday? We will explain. And then Bill Belichick singing the praises of Cam Newton. But he might have the toughest job in the NFL this entire season, and we'll explain why coming up. And today's poll question, inspired by the big fella Kendrick Perkins, who said that he believes LeBron and AD are the NBA's best duo since Kobe and Shaq. Do you agree? Take a look at the options. Cast your vote on my Twitter page at ESPN Greeny. We'll continue to vote as we go. It's Get Up on ESPN. Is brought to you by Disney's Mulan, streaming Friday for Disney Plus subscribers who unlock premier access, and by the number one brand in prepaid, Metro by T-Mobile. All right, let's get up and go through a very busy day in sports, starting with the trade deadline. Padres very busy, including a deal for pitcher Mike Clevinger, who was traded from the Indians for six players. He was under heat recently for his actions during the pandemic while the team was in Chicago, but he's a good pitcher, and that's a big acquisition for San Diego. Football, Super Bowl champion head coach Andy Reid has agreed to a new contract extension with the Chiefs through the 2025 season. The general manager Brett Veach also had his contract extended to 2025. Bad news in LA. Star safety Derwin James of the Chargers needs surgery on his injured right knee. He'll miss 6 to 8 months, essentially ending his 2020 season. Hurt the knee during practice on Sunday. Elsewhere, in a response to a lawsuit filed by Nebraska football players, the Big Ten revealed its presidents and chancellors voted 11-3 last month to postpone the football season. Ohio State, Iowa, and Nebraska were the three that voted to play. Tennis anyone, Coco Gauff out at the U.S. Open on day one. Anastasia Sevastova knocked off the 16-year-old Gauff in a three-set thriller. It was Gauff's earliest exit from a Grand Slam tournament in her four appearances. And live coverage of the U.S. Open continues today, noon Eastern on ESPN. Serena Williams begins her quest for a 24th Grand Slam title. And then coverage will move to ESPN2 at 5 p.m., then back to ESPN at 8 with primetime coverage in which you will see Venus Williams. And you can see every point streaming live on the ESPN app. Back to the NFL, and what can only be summarized as a surprising development yesterday, the Jaguars waived fourth-year running back Leonard Fournette, the number four overall pick in 2017, coming off a season in which he set career highs in both rushing and receiving. He released a statement in which he said, "I'm excited about what will come next for myself, wherever that may be. Know that you will get a player who is focused, motivated, and get ready to get to work." Tampa Bay head coach Bruce Arians had this to say when pressed about his team's interest in signing Fournette.
"We'll wait and see. I mean, he's been a good player. We'll just have to wait and see where he fits."
Well, that was a place a lot of us were looking at yesterday. Dan Graziano, our insider, is here. Give us a sense of what teams we should be looking at as possibilities for Leonard Fournette.
You know, running backs, obviously tricky. We talk a lot about how they're undervalued, but this is a guy who's been productive. And if you're looking for a back at this point in the offseason, he's going to be of interest. I look at Chicago, where David Montgomery had an injury last week that should keep him out for a couple of weeks, may cost him the ability to start the season with them. So maybe they need to beef up there. I'm looking at Tampa Bay. That makes some sense there. They haven't been able to figure out what they have. Washington dealing with a lot at the running back position. Not entirely sure how that's going to shake out. And the one that jumped out to me, somebody mentioned it to me yesterday, the Kansas City Chiefs, Damian Williams opted out of the season. You know coaches and you know Andy Reid's history. You know, he likes to have depth at that position. Even though they love the rookie they drafted, Edwards-Helaire, not crazy to think that a team like that could look at Leonard Fournette as a piece that could help them do something that right now they might not be able to do.
Yeah, teams that play with a lead a lot usually could use a ground and pound running back if they want to run clock late in games. All right, Jeff Saturday, give me a team right now that should sign Leonard Fournette immediately.
New England Patriots, without a doubt. But here you have Cam Newton, who's been injured, been banged up. You looked at the opt-out of their right tackle, Cannon, who was a very good football player. You want to protect your quarterback. You want to get touches. Fournette would make sense, right? Sony Michel's coming off another injury. I know the kid Harris, 2 years in the league now. They're looking at him to step up. But when you're talking about a quality running back, this guy over 1,000 yards last year, almost 80 catches. That type of quality, you know, would complement a James White. And even a Sony Michel, if he can't take the beating and continues to get injured, it just would make sense, in my opinion. Again, Belichick loves guys who are dual purpose. This kid can come in and be dual purpose. He's, in my opinion, he's not a home run threat, but he can get downhill behind the shoulder pads and go play some smash mouth football, which may be what the Patriots could do to protect Cam Newton, especially early on in the season.
That's intriguing for sure. McElroy, for those who don't know you, you've been working at the SEC Network for years, so you obviously have covered Fournette going back to his college days. And I remember when he was at LSU, people were talking about him as a once-in-a-lifetime kind of prospect. He was definitively more touted coming into the sport than Zeke Elliott was and a lot of other guys when he was in college. How do you look at this and perceive what has happened with his career to this point?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder.
Well, you're right, Greeny. And at every step throughout the course of his career, dating back to Pee Wee to high school, even in college, he was more often than not the best player on the field. And that's not the case in the NFL. And I think that's something that incredibly talented people have to figure out. It happened with Trent Richardson. Remember a few years back, failed experiment at both Cleveland and in Indianapolis. And I think that when you are that gifted and that naturally powerful and fast, you don't have to learn the nuances of trying to set up blocks, to be patient as you hit the hole, to maybe cut something back when in some cases it's not their play side. I think that's where he's struggled to make the adjustment to become the player that he's capable of becoming. But if he can learn those nuances, learn a little more patience, he can still be an established player because you just can't overpower grown men in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, hey, and yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Let me say this. I love what Greg's saying. Let me say this. Jacksonville is a bad football team. You think Minshew scares anybody on defenses who are lining up against him? Absolutely not. I mean, you just threw a thing up from Himbo, right? 55 negative rushing yards, all those kind of things. Those are things you can talk about. But when players try to overplay because they know their football team can't compete, it frustrates guys. To me, this, you know, with Richardson, I understand that didn't work. I got a front post up in Indianapolis to watch that. But at the end of the day, this kid is productive. Like, let's not take away twice in his career. He's already rushed for over 1,000 yards, and he had almost 80 catches. This guy can do it. He needs to find a system where guys can let him run with it. So if you're looking at Fournette, this is not a guy who hasn't produced. He is producing on a very bad football team.
Now, listen, that's true. They also did draft him ahead of Christian McCaffrey in that draft. They also chose not to take a quarterback in that draft to stick with Blake Bortles. And after they selected, went Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. That's how you get to be where the Jaguars are right now. Meanwhile, if you think the Bengals are thinking again about drafting Joe Burrow, boy, do you have that one wrong. You'll hear the one quality Burrow possesses that has Cincinnati psyched before he even takes his first snap. We'll get to that, and we'll get to this. Sneaky Hembo is calling out Graziano. Here you come, Dan. Here's your question. Which NFL franchise has the record for most consecutive winning seasons? That's the question. The answer's next. This is Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and let's run the floor through last night's NBA action in the bubble. It was the Jimmy Butler show in Game 1, Miami-Milwaukee Heat, an 11-point win. Butler scored 40. He's the third Miami player with a 40-point playoff game. LeBron and D-Wade are the others. In the other game last night, there will be a Game 7 between the Thunder and the Rockets. OKC wins it by 4. Chris Paul led the way, 28 points, 15 of them in the fourth quarter. He had 0 turnovers. Game 7 scheduled for Wednesday. And also from the NBA, Pelicans forward Brandon Ingram capped off a breakthrough season by winning the Most Improved Player Award. He set career highs in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and three-point percentage in his first season in New Orleans. And the NBA playoffs continue today on ESPN. 5 Eastern, we have NBA Countdown. That's followed by Game 2, Celtics and Raptors at 5:30. Then tonight, primetime on ABC. For all the marbles, Game 7, Nuggets and Jazz. Coverage starts with NBA Countdown at 8 Eastern. You can see both games streaming live on the ESPN app. All right, Graziano's had a bunch of time to think about this one from Sneaky Hembo. Here we go, Dan. Which NFL franchise has the record for most consecutive winning seasons?
Yeah, I texted Hembo in a break. I apologize. I think I know this one. This isn't one of those educated guess situations. Last year when the Patriots got to 19, I'm pretty sure I remember reading that the Dallas Cowboys hold the record with 20, the Tom Landry Cowboys. So that's what I'm going to go with.
Well,
I can confirm that is correct. The Patriots are at 19, and the Tom Landry Dallas Cowboys at 20 do hold the record from the mid-60s through the mid-80s.
Keep trying, Himbo.
You truly are. Dan Graziano, you are ridiculous. But let's talk about the Patriots. Will they make it 20 straight winning seasons? They've made the playoffs every year since 2009. Could that streak be in jeopardy? In an article for ESPN.com, our Jeremy Fowler polled NFL executives and ranked all of last year's playoff teams in terms of the likelihood of them making it back to the playoffs this year. And somewhat surprisingly, the Patriots finished 12th out of 12. We'll make that our required reading for today. Here's part of it. New England lost several key starters, tackle Marcus Cannon, safety Patrick Chung, linebacker Dante Hightower, to opt-outs. And many evaluators have questions about whether Cam Newton still has it. If Belichick wins big with this team, an NFL personnel man said, he deserves even more credit. This is not a very talented offense. Whoever the quarterback is won't have an easy time. So again, 12th out of 12, say the evaluators. What say you, Jeff Saturday? Are you buying it?
Wishful thinking from the evaluators. No, I am not buying it. No, this listen, I understand they lost a lot of talent. There's no doubt. The opt-outs, I just made comment about that. We're talking about Fournette. But this team, not only do they make in-game adjustments as well as anybody, they understand they do not beat themselves. I am not sold all the way on the Bills. This is not a division that really scares me. They find ways to win. I like Cam Newton going over there. I do think it'll take him some time to get adjusted, obviously coming back from that injury. But with Josh McDaniels, Cam Newton, I believe this is still a playoff football team.
Okay, so Jeff Saturday, one vote for the Patriots. Greg McElroy, what's your vote?
I'm going to vote against Jeff. I look at the Bills, for instance, using them as an example within the division. I mean, we're talking about a year with so much uncertainty. And look how many pieces they bring back. They bring back 88% of their snaps from a year ago. And we talk about Cam Newton like he's all of a sudden going to come in and revitalize what this Patriot offense needed. Well, he's on the downside of his career. Josh Allen on the other side, who compares very favorably to Cam early in his career, is on the upswing. I think he had marked improvement last year. Expect that improvement to grow significantly heading into this upcoming year. And you look at the pieces around him. I think their trio of wide receivers are excellent with Brown, Beasley, and, of course, with what they bring back. I love Singletary and Stephon Diggs. I mean, I think the Bills, especially with an elite defense, have more pieces, more answers, more known commodities than the Patriots at this point when you take into account the opt-outs.
I'd feel a lot better about the Patriots or a lot more certain about them if not for all the opt-outs on the defensive side. They had the number one defense in football last year, but they've lost almost 50% of those snaps based upon the opt-outs. Dan Graziano, what do you see in New England?
Much as I love McElroy's Josh Allen, Cam Newton comparison, I think that's a great one, honestly, especially you talk about early in their careers. I side with Jeff Saturday here, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, I can't shake this feeling that we're at the part of the horror movie where you think the villain is dead and you're starting to relax and exhale, and he kind of jumps up one last time, and you have to shoot him one more time in order to survive. That's where I think we are with the Patriots right now. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. Coaching is about puzzle solving. This year is the biggest puzzle of all time because you don't know what you've had in terms of the offseason, and he's lost Tom Brady. I think he's embracing the challenge of this, and I just think he knows what he's doing to an extent that has been proven over time. I wouldn't be surprised to see him trade for a receiver, trade for somebody on defense, and we're sitting there going, how did the Patriots get that guy like we do every single year? And remember, 14 playoff teams this year, not 12.
That's a good point there. Jeff, let me come back to you really quickly here because so much of this will come down to Cam. I mean, Belichick's credentials are unquestioned. Everyone buys him, but he's not a magician. He's a great coach. So, Jeff, it's going to come down to just how good Cam is. How good do you expect him to be?
I think he'll be really – listen, you just heard Belichick. I mean, he gushed about Cam Newton and about how competitive he is and where he is in the locker room there early, leaves late, the whole thing everybody wants to hear about a quarterback. But I think Cam Newton has a chip on his shoulder. I think he's listening to the Gregs of the world, right? That he's on the downside of his career. Here's where he is. He's going to replace the quote greatest of all time quarterback. Can he bring anything to it? I think both these guys have a challenge before him. I think he'll meet the challenge. I think he, and listen, I don't think his dual threat days are over. I think Josh McDaniels, he and Dr. Smith can come up with a package where he can still put it down and run. Now, again, they're going to have to protect him to a degree, but at the end of the day, Cam Newton still, in my opinion, has something he wants to prove and show the NFL what he's about.
Final word, Greg, go.
I think what Cam, a lot of people are talking about, well, Josh McDaniels is going to revolutionize what they did in Carolina with option routes and crossing routes, getting guys in space. He's done it all before. The problem is he's not the most naturally accurate quarterback. So when we're talking about getting guys in space, getting guys moving, if they have to adjust their body just a little bit, that'll affect the yards after catch, which in turn would have a real negative effect on their explosive play capability there in New England. So I think Cam's going to have to be his best self to get this team to the playoffs. And given the health and the concerns there, I'm just not sure we're 100% going to get that.
We'll wait and see. Obviously, that's one of the big questions going into the season. Meanwhile, Don Graziano always has a bunch of answers. Let's run the hurry up here, and let's start with the market for Earl Thomas. He's out there. Where's he going?
Not a lot of buzz around Earl Thomas right now. I was checking in on this yesterday. What I was told was the biggest thing he's up to right now is preparing to file a grievance against the Ravens to get his $10 million guaranteed salary back that the Ravens don't want to have to pay him for conduct detrimental to the team. So, yeah, I think Earl Thomas is waiting to see what the market is for him, and we'll figure it out from there.
How about Jadeveon Clowney?
Jadeveon Clowney also still out there. Was supposed to be one of the big free agents of this offseason. My understanding is still looking for more than teams want to pay him. The Cowboys checked in with him a couple of weeks ago before they signed Everson Griffin. They thought his price was still too high. Yannick Ngakoue getting traded to Minnesota is interesting because there may be teams that thought they might get Ngakoue that might now turn their attention to Clowney. And if he gets his wish, that means their price will come up.
And then Joe Burrow?
And Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, Ray, named the starter of the Cincinnati Bengals, the least shocking announcement of the NFL offseason, obviously the number one pick, and they got rid of Andy Dalton, so everybody knew this was coming. But I had a chance to talk to Zach Taylor, their head coach, yesterday, and he is gushing about Joe Burrow, saying, when we're out there on the field, we don't even think about it as we have a rookie quarterback anymore. He said the way that Joe Burrow communicates in the huddle, in the meeting room, he just feels like this is a guy who's ready-made to go, and he expects him to start right away and play well right out of the gate. So a lot of positives about Joe Burrow, especially when you talk about, you know, they haven't been on the field much. So Zach Taylor's talking about the way he communicates with the players, with the coaching staff, and how that's been at a high level, and he really thinks that's going to be a benefit early on.
Super high confidence for Joe Burrow. Jeff Saturday, what do you think of that?
All the confidence in the world doesn't beat the Steelers and the Ravens. You know what I mean? So as I'm looking at the confidence, Peyton Manning was really confident as a rookie as well, right? And he went 3-13 and led the league, and it still, I think still has the record for most interceptions. So Burrow's confidence doesn't really affect what I'm thinking about the Bengals. The Bengals are going to be a bad football team this year. He does have guys around him who can help him. I understand all those things. This is not a forecast for his career. I think this year it's going to be a struggle for that football team. They win six. If they win six games, you know, put a hero shirt on, man, because the guy has called. He has called that football team to greatness, even with six wins.
All right, again, Greg, SEC Network. So you saw every snap of Joe Burrow last season in what might have been the greatest season that any college quarterback ever had, and he comes in. You know about that confidence. You know about that brashness. So if it doesn't go well, you don't think that's a major problem for him.
Yeah, you worry a little bit about exposing a rookie quarterback and things not going away and things not going his way, and all of a sudden he's shaken from a confidence standpoint. I can assure you guys that will not happen with Joe Burrow. This dude is the most confident player I've probably ever been around. It's bordering on the edge of arrogance, but I kind of like it within a quarterback. So even if things don't go according to plan and they win only three or four games and he leads the NFL in interceptions, it won't matter in his long-term development because he still needs the reps. He still needs the opportunity to get out there and adjust to the speed of the game, adjust to the pace of play in the NFL. And I think he's going to do a really good job over the course of time. But I agree with Jeff. Give him the key to the city if they get to six wins, and let's go from there.
Well, yeah. I think an appropriate level of arrogance is sort of the ante to be a great quarterback, right, Jeff? I mean, that's a necessity. If you don't have at least an appropriate level of arrogance, and you probably can't be a great quarterback in the NFL.
No, there's no doubt. Listen, when you talk about you got to have super thick skin especially going to a very bad football team at this point. So I don't harbor any ill will. I'm with Greg. I like a guy who likes himself, especially at that position. So I have no problem with it. I just want to make sure we're all keeping our expectations in some in a small amount of reality, right? Like head coaches gushing about their first pick in the draft shouldn't surprise anyone. Like Dan said, you know, easiest storyline to write. He's the best quarterback that we could possibly imagine, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, we do have to do some level protection because the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens, it's that you're going to have to go play twice. They flat out get after you, right? They open up with the Chargers. So for him, I understand. I wouldn't want anybody else starting, but just make sure we limit the expectations of what we're asking this kid to do.
No, I hear you. And they open up with the Chargers. That means Joey Bosa. They also get Myles Garrett twice as they play Cleveland. So it's not supposed to be easy when you're the first pick in the draft and you go to the team that had the worst record. But if Joe Burrow can handle it, then obviously we'll see what he's able to do as a rookie. Let's take a break. We'll come back here. Dak Prescott is going to be the center of the conversation because in our new ranking, and they were put out on ESPN this morning, he's ahead of Rodgers, he's ahead of Wentz, he's ahead of Brady. Does it make sense? We'll discuss. Get up on ESPN. We're back on Get Up, and let's run the bases around the action from the majors yesterday, beginning with Gerrit Cole, who continues to struggle for the Yankees. Gave up 4 runs on 8 hits in 5 innings against Tampa. The Yankees are now 1-7 against the Rays this year. They're 4.5 games behind the Rays in the American League East. Elsewhere, Edwin Encarnacion and the White Sox took advantage of poor defense by the Twins in the top of the ninth, beat Minnesota 8-5. White Sox now a 1-game lead over Cleveland in a very tight American League Central. Out west, the Padres beat the Rockies behind a Fernando Tatis Jr. triple and then a bunch of excellent defense. Padres now 22-15. They're 4.5 games back of first in the National League West. Back to football, and hot off the presses this morning on ESPN.com, our version of the NFL Top 100. We rank the top 100 players in the NFL, and it should come as no surprise, Patrick Mahomes is in at number one after his record-setting performance during the last season. So I want to show you two full screens here. The first is this. These are the top 10 players according to our rankings. You see Aaron Donald is the highest rated non-quarterback at number 2. Michael Thomas, the first receiver on the list at number 5. There are 4 quarterbacks in the top 10, including last year's MVP Lamar Jackson. As for quarterbacks, here is where some others ranked. A couple of 40-year-olds, Breeze and Brady, at 15 and 32 respectively. The top 4 quarterbacks continue the trend of new generation with Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, all inside the top 10 overall. And there are some of the rankings. So with a chance to digest those briefly, let me start, Greg, with you as a quarterback in my group this morning. What was your number one takeaway as you looked at that list?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Greeny, I understand that maybe Aaron Rodgers is not necessarily in the class of Pat Mahomes. Like, I'm willing to concede that. But to tell me that there's six quarterbacks in the world better than Aaron Rodgers, I think is absolutely laughable. I don't get me wrong, I love the upside of the guys that are listed ahead of him. In particular, I'm very excited about what Deshaun Watson may do. But Dak Prescott being ahead of Aaron Rodgers, come on, man. We act like Aaron Rodgers just got through playing a season in which he threw for 3,100 yards and had more interceptions than touchdowns. No, the guy went 26-4 touchdown interception, threw for over 4,000, and went 13-3. What else do we want from this guy? And that was, by the way, in the first year of a new system. So I am very bullish on what Aaron Rodgers is going to do this year. And I understand if we're going to look at last year, it's fine. But to tell me he's the seventh best quarterback in the world, I think is absolutely laughable.
I do too, and I think it's the best thing that could possibly happen to him, to his team, and to all the Packer fans out there. Because I think Aaron Rodgers, particularly with his own team sort of dissing him in the way they did in the draft, I think he's going to go on a scorched earth tour this year. I think he's writing down the names of every single person on that list in front of him. So I kind of like it. Graziano, what jumped out to you?
I like Dak Prescott at number 20. I think he has outperformed Aaron Rodgers over the last two or three years, and he deserves that spot. I was thinking about our old friend Dan Orlovsky, who I know has gone on to other shows, but I was looking at Dak Prescott 19 spots ahead of Carson Wentz and got a chuckle out of how much that must bother him. But I mean, this is a guy who has accomplished an awful lot in his first 4 years, and I think is often underrated, but in this particular list, I thought seeing Dak Prescott at number 20 overall was encouraging. I think there are people out there paying attention to the right stuff, and Dak Prescott has done a lot of the right stuff over his career.
That obviously has been a hot-button topic on this show and elsewhere. Jeff, let me just ask you about that specifically. Dak Prescott being ranked as high as he is, ahead of Carson Wentz, ahead of a lot of other highly rated quarterbacks. What do you think of that? Because Dak is a player upon whom there's always a lot of debate. What do you think, Jeff?
No, I think they got it right. I think when you look at Dak Prescott and what he's done for his football team, again, kind of what Greg was saying about Aaron Rodgers. Like, what else can you ask of Dak Prescott the last couple of years? I mean, this guy continues to win for his football team. He puts you in the best position to win. So when I'm looking at where Dak Prescott ranks, especially above Carson Wentz, I love it. I love that they're getting after Dan, too. There's nothing better than that. So as you're looking at it, I agree with Dak Prescott being ahead of Wentz.
And let me go back to Aaron Rodgers as well with you here before we get your number one takeaway, because, you know, that the guy with the chip on his shoulder is frequently a very dangerous guy. What do you think of the way Rodgers will come out and play this year with the disrespect he seems to be getting from practically every direction?
You said it best. This is the best thing that could happen for Green Bay fans and the Green Bay Packer football team. As you're talking about a guy, the team didn't, you know, the team's thinking of replacing him. Everybody outside of the organization thinking all his best football is behind him, all those kinds of things. The reality is this is still an incredible football player, and he's the type of guy who uses things like this for motivation. He will do exactly like you said. He will write the names down. He does take things personal. This goes all the way back to where he was drafted at the beginning of his career. So this is a guy who's always felt like he's playing from, you know, playing behind where people think he should. This guy, it is as good as could be asked for the Green Bay Packers because of what they've done to him. Putting him down, like Greg said, eighth best quarterback in the league? Not even close.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Meanwhile, you had a different takeaway from this. When you looked at the list, Jeff, what was the thing that jumped out to you?
And Watt brothers, you know, TJ's at 31, JJ's at 38. I mean, I think TJ's is low and JJ is way high. So JJ just changed up the last few years. T.J. Watt is an absolute pair. You think that guy had 8.5 sacks. He had 80 successful rushes in the NFL. This guy has absolutely turned the Steelers defense and got them going. First one of the best defense in the league. I like where T.J. Watt is. I think he should be higher. I think J.J. should be down much lower.
Okay. All right. So we've got it there again. A little bit of trouble understanding all of that with a little bit of breaking up there. But you get the point. TJ Watt, a player that should be ranked a little higher. Let's take a break here. We'll come back again. That list is up on ESPN.com. It's brand new. As we continue, you've heard some call for Lamar Jackson to stop running so much in order to prolong his career. You'll hear why some of my friends here this morning think that is a bad idea. What does Swagoo think? We'll find out as Marcus Spears joins us in our next hour. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.